I'm Laura Vinroot Poole. For 20 years, I've owned Capital, an internationally recognized specialty store. Capital has never really been about fashion. It's always been about people. What we wore was created to share the meaningful journeys that inspire me. From the designers and friends I meet on the road to the men and women with whom I work each day.
Everybody wants to know her.
It was such a privilege to speak with Professor Botter, a co-founder of Augustinus Botter and a stem cell pioneer. He gives us an education in the stem cell field and the science behind his extraordinary skincare. I couldn't bear to ask what he wore to prom. Sorry. This is our final episode of the Wellness Series. Professor Botter, thanks so much for joining us.
Nice to meet you.
We're speaking to you in Germany.
Yes, I'm in Germany, yes.
Your lockdown, I think, is over. You've almost treated coronavirus quicker than anyone.
It's a sunny day to hear you see. We feel nothing so much about coronavirus. People wear this face mask when they go to restaurants, but inside you take them off. So, but actually I learned we had just 25 cases in the whole region over the last month. So very, very low numbers.
Oh, wow.
So there's no impact in everyday life for us, you know. It's all fine.
Amazing. And where are you based in Germany?
I'm based in Leipzig area. Leipzig, that's a city 200 kilometers next to Berlin, I think, west of Berlin.
And is that where you're from?
Originally, I'm from the Munich area, in the pre-Alpine region between Munich and Augsburg.
Can you tell me about your upbringing and how you became a scientist?
Originally, I wanted to become a musician until it turned out at the age of 17, more or less, that I found out I was practicing so hard every bit, but I don't have a real talent like to be a super good musician. I was practicing 5-6 hours every, because I grew up in a monastery school. It was so boring over there. You couldn't do much besides go to school. So I was doing music all day long. But at the end, I found out that, you know, when you see real musicians, they have an amazing talent. I felt I don't have this, so I should do something else. And since biology was always my favorite topic in school, I thought, what should I do, which will have one day a real impact? So I thought I should study medicine. I went to medicine.
And was your family supportive? Did you have doctors in the family?
In my family, from both sides, actually, I don't know any doctor at all. Actually, they were either teachers or having small companies, something like this.
So did you go to traditional medical school to be a practicing physician?
I went to traditional conventional medical school, yes, and I studied in different countries. I studied besides Germany, in Italy, in China, also partly in the US, I did rotations there. And in Switzerland, I wanted to be a surgeon doing organ transplant, working with an extremely renowned European professor, was called Rudolf Pickemeyer, who together with a British colleague and a French colleague, we're working on liver transplantation at the time. And so I went there, was very happy to be accepted, but it turned out also that at some point I thought I shouldn't become a surgeon, because I found it a little bit, also again, was not my primary talent. I thought I start not to do, to like it so much, actually, because you have to do the same things all the time to be really good. And so I thought I should go to research where I can do some new things all the time. And then I became a pharmacologist and toxicologist, which is the only field in medicine, at least in German, where I can most of the time do research, not just doing everyday surgeries. But of course, this exposure triggered a lot of ideas and a lot of interests, and showed me how much need you have in a way to find the next generation after organ transplantation. Or if you transplant an organ, as a patient, you still remain to be a patient. You need immunosuppression. So I start to think, how you would develop technologies for organ repair and also skin repair. And I was doing a kind of medical thesis, it's called a doctoral thesis in burn treatment at the time also when I was a medical student. And I found out all this, which is known, obviously, people suffering from burns remain with massive scarring. So it stimulated me to find out ways which potentially could prevent scarring. But it took me many, many years after this medical times in medical school and early clinical practice that took me some time to find out what would be the approach that I'm doing today.
So were you working with, within a pharmaceutical company or within a university?
After I finished medical school, I was working at Harvard Medical School for almost 1.5 years of research, like a postdoctoral fellow. Right. And then I went to surgery in a medical school, which is like a university in Germany. I never worked with the pharmaceutical industry, but it is a kind of specialization I did later, which is called pharmacology and toxicology. So like you can be a surgeon for something like heart surgery. I became a pharmacologist, but not in the pharmaceutical industry, but with a medical affiliation at the University of Hanover at the time. And from there, I moved to biotechnology in stem cell biology. And from there, I became a professor in tissue engineering at some point in Germany at the University of Tübingen. And then I moved to Leipzig a little bit later, where I was offered a chair in stem cell biology in 2003.
And the stem cell technology, I mean, that's what your work with burn victims, and was that how it started? And can you explain a little bit how that works?
Burn treatment is a very complex job with critically ill patients, and I have seen such patients suffering from burns and different methods how people treat them with different forms of skin transplant. And I've seen the onset of tissue engineering where doctors or scientists try to grow skin outside the human body. And at some point also in my own work where I was trying to develop a kind of biodefficient liver in my early days, I found that it is very, very difficult, and you have very little time, actually, when patients go into organ failure to develop all these replacement tissues. And I thought it's a dead-end concept, because it's a little bit just like a new form of organ transplantation. You try to grow something outside the human body. And then I thought, what would be the mechanism which could trigger potentially your own innate mechanisms of repair, which in a way relates to inflammation. So there are wake-up signals in our own human body which kind of activate your own stem cells, and I try to figure out how the human body would approach tissue repair. And from this basic research, which of course took many years, I tried to increase the understanding how normal physiology would deal with injury and inflammation. And if you're very young and if you would have a small cut, for example, on your left hand, it would heal with no scarring. If you would burn your hand on a hot plate, let's imagine your left hand touches a hot plate and you would get a massive burn, the healing will be in a way including scarring or scar formation. So I thought it seems to be the size of the injury which determines what your surviving stem cells in your hand would do. So a small cut heals perfectly and big injury heals with scarring. So I found that it may be just the absence of specific molecules which forces your own body to go into different forms of healing and so on. I tried to find out what these molecules are and how it works. This is my research.
Will you explain to somebody who is an art major what exactly is a stem cell is?
No, we imagine a big, beautiful picture, a painting in front of your eyes, and you would cut it in 1,000 pieces. And you as a human being would remember to reassemble all these puzzle stones. In my hypothesis, which I developed, as stem cells in a way is screening the environment, which we call microenvironment. And depending on what it sees, it will try to fix it. So it's a little bit like a repair tool, a repair engineer you have in your human body to try to fix whatever is damaged around you. And you can imagine, like in the house you live, you may have some air conditioning or electricity or some heating system in the winter which can break down. So you would call an engineer to come and fix it. And if this engineer would come without a toolbox, the person couldn't fix it. So these engineers in your own skin, for example, would be your cells, which we call stem cells, which have the duty and the knowledge and the know-how based on their own genetic code, in a way, on their history, to fix your skin. But if you don't have the toolbox, they cannot do it. So it's an interplay between the knowledge or the genetic code, in a way, whatever cells in your skin you have, they are made, they have the capacity to fix it, and what we provide to them. And that's, in a way, ends up explaining a little bit what our cream is doing. It's just a toolbox. It doesn't contain any cells, and it's just, in a way, a little bit like the stem cell food. You know? But the stem cells that we have in our human body, so we're all made of stem cells. So there are many people who think today that aging is a disease, but I think it's just a lack of regeneration, because as we progress with time, we seem to have less and less access to these toolboxes, to the signals that we would normally make. So we seem to have an innate genetic code which shuts down the access to our own repair tools. But let me introduce the term epigenetics. Epigenetics means that something from the outside which impacts your body, your own genetic code, but it reacts according what's happening to it from the outside, just like you eat good food, you exercise, you live in a good social environment. You as a human being could decide to eat bad food, never exercise again, and only stress yourself, so you would become sick. And Aristotle, a Greek philosopher, once said, imagine a beautiful sailing boat in front of your eyes now. We cannot change the wind, but we can set the sails differently. Mm-hmm. And this a little bit explains what epigenetic may mean to us. We have the human freedom to choose what we eat or how we exercise or what kind of environment. To some extent, we can choose. But my contribution to the field possibly is the research that I have been doing on epigenetic regulators, which your own stem cells.
When in your research of the hydrogel, did it occur to you that, say, your wife or your daughter may want to use the product, or that it could connect to make women happy?
Actually, a few years ago, I met Charles Rossi, who is my partner now in this enterprise. When we started this brand and the skin, kind of, one said, you know, I had been working on repair for massive injuries, but, you know, it is not the scope of an academic environment and not even the potential to develop this to real clinical application. It's just basic research, at least what I have been doing. But it's an open wound, so it is also different from intact skin. But he proposed one, so if nobody, in a way, at this point, you know, we are not progressing quickly enough with this, why not at least try to develop something which would take wrinkles away, and maybe one day we would be able to be successful and give us the power, in a way, to fund our own research, to progress faster on this route, to develop clinical treatments and get. And from this point, it took me about almost 2 years to develop the first skincare prototypes, process. And so what I tried to find out would be what nutrients, what molecules your skin would need when it is exposed to, for example, the sun, or when you're exposed to pollution, or when your skin is remodeling every day a little bit, what's physiologic to your skin, what we could add. And so, and the cream, in a way, was made or created with a purpose. And the purpose was to bring this to the to more people, because the approach that using your own intrinsic stem cells was a little bit disruptive at the time. People were still thinking you would grow skin outside the human body, transplant it. So think about this. Many people said, also seeing these results, it's too good to be true. So now at least everyone can test it.
And how did you meet Charles, and how did he convince you to do this? You didn't have a background in this, and definitely didn't, I wouldn't think, have a background in influencers or celebrities or things like that. How did y'all meet, and how did he convince you to do this?
We have a common friend who brought us together, who is Robert Friedland. He also knew Steve Jobs, and to my knowledge, he created the term Apple, or brought him to the Apple Garden. So this person at Charles Oversize is, of course, very knowledgeable and very interested in this field, and he brought us together. And Charles once, in a way, met me, and he just kept my address in case he would ever need some advice in this field, and he once visited me. I know he's truly interested in the topic, and we want to develop this technology to make it available for more and more people.
Will you talk to me a little bit about how the cream actually works, and things like, you know, why does it work only on clean skin? You say that it takes 27 days to see the skin transform. Can you talk a little bit about the science behind that?
Actually, it takes a little bit less. You know, some people actually using the C after a few days, that they like the feeling of the cream. But and the remodeling process of your skin is a slow process. It's not a symptomatic treatment which you put on something and makes your skin look shiny or something. But it is an effort in a way to bring this nutrients to your skin which your own repair cells need, which we make called precursor repair cells or stem cells. And so it is more microenvironmental repair toolbox of different components. And the innovation behind it is twofold. One of them, it has lipid structures, which we call ceramides. You can imagine like a big train and an engine in front. And this engine is the ceramide, which transports other goodies, which sit in the wagons, to the environment. These are vitamins, nutrients, and minerals that go to this environment. The science, in a way, is not maybe adding a new stem cells or removing ones. Actually, it's just a little bit like the stem cell superfood. And that's the knowledge behind. We found out over years of research what such cells need when they have injury. And that's in a way in a cream.
You're also a professor still and the director of the Applied Stem Cell Biology and Cell Technology. Do your students ask you about the skincare business? And do they want to know about Victoria Beckham?
Actually, not so much, actually. Yeah. No. It's not so much, a little bit, yeah, not really so much. No. Because actually, it's more known in the US. Actually, in Germany, it's not so known. Actually, we were really lucky that we were introduced to Melanie Griffith at the time and in this group of persons, and it was by word of mouth that it spread that a cream seems to work. So actually, that's why some people start to call it a cream that works. And it's really what this, such people have access to the world's best products and they start to like it, and then other influencers and makeup artists try to recommend it to other people, and that's how it started. It's quite became really popular in the US, and it started also in Europe, also of course in London and in England and in France. But in Germany, it's still in the beginning phase, I would say.
Well, I've used it since the minute it came out, and I love it. Professor Botter, did you consult with dermatologists? Because I know that's obviously a different field than what you trained in, to know sort of what women wanted as far as texture, smell, you know, how they would want the product to feel on their skin.
One of the first testing person was a friend of Charles, and lady, she had been working in the fashion industry and got acne from chemical toxicity from makeup. And she was so desperate in despair that for 2 years her skin was getting worse and worse. And this young woman in her mid-20s started to test the cream, and she got immaculate skin after 6 weeks. And this showed me that it seems to be a game changer. It makes people happy. It's really amazing. It's really unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
I remember one lady 8 weeks ago, she had very rough and dry skin, and now she looks like a supermodel. She has beautiful skin, like almost all of them she would have been using the most expensive skincare. But it's really true. Of course, there's never 100% in earthing, but you know, in most cases, it's really, really working for these people.
Oh, it really works, and it really does make people happy. I can share that it makes people happy.
In every age, you know, people. Our first testing client, one of first was a lady. She was 86 years old, and she got baby-like skin. It took some time, but she got very soft skin.
Well, one of the things I think is interesting about it is that makeup artists do love it so much because, honestly, what I have found is that it makes you not need makeup. I mean, I think that it sort of makes makeup obsolete. I find it curious that makeup artists like it.
Well, it's a big success for them. You know, if they can minimize the use of makeup at least and put some an accent, you know, a little bit some things. But it also, of course, if you have, of course, makeup is nice when you have colors, you want to have some specific occasion. So we in cooperation with Victoria Beckham, we have a prime moisturizer serum, which is also a game changer in this concept. And I'm very grateful to Victoria Beckham and her team that we have now kind of interface, you know, which prepares your skin, keeps it healthy, and protects you from whatever you have to put on it, if you want. Yeah.
Well, you couldn't have had a better partner in the project because she has perfect skin. I've met her. She's so beautiful, but she's very, very serious about her skin.
Super serious. It's a big honor for us and, of course, to be selected. And she has done this after extensive scrutiny, I'm sure, and testing herself. And her skin is very nice, yeah. And she likes the cream. Yeah, she likes it.
What do you hope your legacy is in the field of science?
No, the legacy, in a way, it is still a lot of work to do. Of course, we are just in the beginning, but you know, once we have put this child on into the world of skincare, maybe we can go into extending this concept in the next 5 to 6 years to go into more clinical applications to show that intrinsic stem cells can be navigated by outside signals, which basically describes in one sentence what a technology is. It's a navigation technology. And I believe, and I'm sure we have no shortage of stem cells. We keep them all alive. So this is a myth in stem cell biology that maybe we need stem cells from outside. I think it's not true. And if you accept this hypothesis that we have no shortage, then what is it really? Why would we not stay healthy all our lives? And I think it's just a lack of communication. So we seem to lose the access to communication signals, but the epigenetics also means human freedom. So why not give to a child which is burned the signals to fix the skin itself? Or to people like us as we get older to keep us healthy by providing us access to the signals also inside by this communication technology, just like you drive a car and you look at a navigation map, but you as a driver decide where you want to go. That's a little bit like a stem cell. Stem cells are autonomous in the decision-making process, but they need a navigation. And this we can provide because we have human freedom. So it's the second myth in stem cell biology was people think more stem cells would help more, but actually injecting more stem cells somewhere wouldn't make any difference. My hypothesis, we need more communication pathways. And the third myth in stem cell biology today, which this technology is addressing, people used to think what we really need to do is making the cells in your skin fix your skin. And they don't need to fix your brain. So it's a little bit like a specialization, like in your profession or my profession, we have a totally different experience and education. I could never do what you do. When I don't do a patent, I can do this.
I can never do what you do.
So we are specialized. And that's an advantage and not a disadvantage for us because we are specialized. And this is a myth in stem cell biology because we think we have to do everything. We have to be multipotent, but I tell you, we have to be specialized. This is how our human body is set up. We are totally specialized with our stem cells. We just didn't know how to navigate them. And this is maybe the technology which we might say, hopefully one day will be considered as a new form of teaching that we, in a way, learn how to use this power that we have innate to us better with creating a new kind of medicine.
You also have a very philanthropic arm to your business and you've been described as a humanitarian. Can you tell me a recent philanthropic effort that you've been most proud of and why it's important to you?
I have to acknowledge also the contribution of Charles and the people who invested in our company like Jacques Vallée, all these human beings were so intrigued by the idea that we can help people with this technology. And of course, the company is still small, but we have helped villages in Africa independent from our products by financial support for children, or myself, I have treated children with scarring, helped them to get over it. But also more recently in this corona crisis, a lot of these creams have been donated to hospitals, because when you wear a face mask, your skin changes and it makes people happy. It's just a small contribution, but as we will grow bigger, I think we can have more activities in this field. Or in cancer patients, we have given them in yeah. France to hospitals, and people with post-radiation skin, you know, when you put on the rich skin, the skin gets beautiful again. And such small things, you know, make a big change for some people.
Professor Botter, thanks so much for being with us today. We appreciate it so much, and we're so proud to sell the cream and the rich cream and the body cream.
I'm very happy you're lucky. You know, that's the biggest reward you can have for scientists, which I think is not happening to so many people in basic science, that something comes out which is really making people happy and is useful.
It makes yeah. people really happy.
Yes.
and really pretty.
It's very pretty. It's, I must say, I'm very, it's really true. Yes. It's really true. Makes people look beautiful. And because I think it seems to be good for the skin, makes the skin healthy, get this glow. And this is the reason why we as a relatively small company still have this massive word of mouth, and we have the highest repurchasing rate in the industry.
Thanks for taking the time to do this.
Thank you so much, yeah.
What We Wore is produced by Capital and Balto Creative Media. The original song, Someone So Enchanting, was composed and performed by Britt Drozda. What We Wore is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Find out more at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.